Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Enbridge's fourth virtual project update meeting for our Line 5 Wisconsin segment relocation project. Thanks for joining us today. We appreciate your time and your interest. My name is Michelle Johnson, and I am your host for today's meeting. I am your contact at Enbridge, responsible for community and stakeholder engagement in northern Wisconsin. We have a full agenda for our time today together, so let's get started. We will begin the meeting, as we always do, with a safety moment. Next, we'll spend some time getting the latest news about the project from three key project leaders, followed by a review of Enbridge's Human Trafficking Awareness and Prevention Plan for Wisconsin. After that discussion, we will hear from one of our colleagues about the Line 5 in Michigan and the Great Lakes Tunnel Project. We will answer questions from you as we make our way through the agenda, and we will end the meeting by 11. A couple of things to note before we begin. We are recording this meeting, and we will post the recording along with the visuals on our website at enbridge.com/L5WIS. You will also find recordings from previous meetings. Recordings are posted about 2 weeks after the meeting. If you join via phone or having trouble viewing the webcast, you will be able to see them on the recording. We are interested in your feedback and questions, so here's the directions for how you communicate to us. If you join via the web, please type your questions or comments in the web chat feature. We will not share your name or location. If you are on the phone and want to ask a question, please press 0 and you will be connected to a live operator who will send your question to me. You can ask questions anytime. There's no need to wait. Near the end of the meeting, we have some polling questions for you. And you can also type suggestions or comments into the web chat feature or press 0 on your phone anytime. We're interested in any comments you'd like to share with us. And now on to the safety moment. Let's talk about driving, cell phone use, and the law in Wisconsin. So here's the law. Texting while driving is against the law for all drivers in Wisconsin. No driver can use a handheld mobile device while driving through a work zone, except to report an emergency. And handheld or hands-free cell phone use while driving when you have a probationary license or instruction permit is prohibited, unless you're making an emergency call. So how do you stay safe? Here's some tips. Turn off your phone, switch it to silent every time you get behind the wheel. You could even store it out of the way in the back seat or the trunk of your car. You can record a voice message or have automatic text answers that tell callers or texters that you are driving. You can pull over and stop in a safe area if you must use your cell phone, like a gas station parking lot, grocery store parking lot, or you can ask a passenger to call or text for you. So here's a sobering statistic. In the United States, in 2018, over 2,800 people were killed and an estimated 400,000 were injured in crashes involving a distracted driver. One in five of the people who died in these crashes were not in vehicles. They were walking, riding their bikes, or otherwise outside their vehicle or a vehicle. Thanks for taking the time to put safety first. All right, the next thing I'd like to do is take a couple minutes to review project details, make sure everyone has the same level of knowledge about the project. Line 5 is a vital link to propane and other energy suppliers for the upper Midwest, as well as states such as Ohio, New York, and Canadian provinces, Ontario and Quebec, where refining capacity exists. Line 5 has operated safely since 1953. In July 2019, the Bad River Band of the Lake Superior Tribe of Chippewa Indians requested we remove Line 5 from the reservation, and in response, we have initiated the permitting process to reroute 42 miles around the reservation. The project map is on the slide. It's also available on the Line 5 Wisconsin webpage at enbridge.com. Enbridge filed permits with the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources in early 2020. There was a public meeting and comment period in June and July of last year, and we are currently awaiting the draft environmental impact statement. We hosted community meetings in February a year ago in Ashland, Mellon, and Hurley, and today is our fourth virtual project update meeting with stakeholders. We also filed with the Public Service Commission of Wisconsin. However, we secured agreements with 100% of the landowners along the route, and we withdrew that application in July 2020. Construction begins upon receipt of permits. And that's the information. So let's go to our speakers. I'll start by introducing myself. I am Michelle Johnson, responsible for community engagement in northern Wisconsin. I've worked at Enbridge for almost 9 years in a variety of roles in supply chain and tribal engagement. Prior to Enbridge, I worked in transportation, tourism, and economic development. I grew up in the woods of northern Wisconsin, and I currently live in Superior with my family. Our next speaker is Adam. Adam Erickson is one of our lead project engineers. He hails from northern Wisconsin and has worked for Enbridge for 20-plus years. In that time, he's worked on many local projects and has been a part of our operations team that covers Line 5 in northern Wisconsin. He's worked on this project from the beginning, and you may remember him from the open houses. We have a new team member to introduce. Joe McGabber is our environment lead, replacing Catherine. We wish Catherine well as she takes on her new role in the company. Joe was born and raised in Wisconsin and was a resident of the Northland for most of his life until moving south a couple of years ago. Following a career in engineering consulting, Joe joined Enbridge in 2006 in the Environment Department. Over the years, he has spent time in operations, but has spent most of his time focusing on project environmental permitting and compliance aspects. Lastly, April. April has been with Enbridge since 2016 and leads our tribal engagement in Wisconsin. She has spent her career working with Native communities to ensure companies are listening to concerns and addressing issues associated with infrastructure, mining, and oil and gas projects. She and her daughter live in Minneapolis. All right, let's get our first update from Jill.
Thank you, Michelle. Appreciate it. Since the last update meeting on the environment side, we've been coordinating with project permitting agencies and responding to WDNR information requests. We recently submitted a response for a construction stormwater permit information response. That happened in the last week or two. And also we're working on a WDNR information request for the EIS, which we're targeting to submit towards the end of the month here. I appreciate the team's efforts to work on completing that response. We also have been starting to plan for survey activities for the upcoming summer months. In the last update meeting, early 2020 was an anticipated timeframe for the DNR to publish the draft EIS and schedule the public hearing as part of that process as well. These activities look like they're going to happen a little later in the year. We're looking sometime at over the southern summer months is the current thought on schedule for these activities. With that update, I will turn it over to Adam.
Thanks, Joe. So a little update on the kind of engineering and construction side. So as a project, we've really done most of the field activities. Joe mentioned surveys that have taken place and a little bit of surveying that we have yet to do. But we've really completed most of the field portions of that. We've completed the topographic surveys, the cadastral surveys, geotechnical investigations, design reviews, and also, as I mentioned in our last call, we've received our first batch of pipe that will be used for our horizontal directional drills. So a lot has happened here in the last year, but we find ourselves here in the winter, and we have got most of these things done. So we have not had much of a field presence in the last month or so, and over the next couple of months, we really likely won't have much for field presence either. It will pretty much just be our project management team kind of bouncing around to whatever area may need to wherever we may have an issue that we need to have a conversation on or take care of small things. So it's going to be a pretty light presence in the field here for the next couple months. As we get into the summer, we, as Joe mentioned, there are some environmental surveys that are going to be kicking off, and then there will be some catch-up, some smaller versions of filling in some gaps on some of those other surveys that we've done as well. So there will be a small presence in the summer, but it'll be pretty minimal. And then really after that, the next major sort of field presence would be when our mainline contractor is on board and ready to start sort of showing up in the field and getting prepared for construction. And, of course, that won't happen until our permit process is complete. So with that, I wanted to take a few minutes to talk about another area that I guess is kind of near and dear to the work that we've done, and that's just how we've worked on the route in with regards to wetlands and how we've worked to avoid those. If you think about a project like this, we started with kind of a blank slate. We started with a line five. We knew we had our objectives as far as where we wanted to go in general. And then, so once we generated a kind of general route, we brought in the first wetland data set that we could find, which is the Wisconsin Wetland Inventory. We brought that into our GIS system, our geographic information system, and really scoured the route looking for opportunities to be able to ensure that we were avoiding as many wetlands as possible. So we went through and we did a number of iterations of that. And then once the weather got appropriate, we went out and we gathered the actual delineated wetland areas. Once those areas were delineated as the data was coming in, we then had another opportunity where we kind of pushed the pipeline left or right to try to avoid as many of those as we sort of reasonably could, keeping in mind that we have landowners that were amicable to us being on the property. And so we really worked to avoid wetlands wherever possible. And so I just wanted to throw that out there to show a little bit about how we made some of the routing on the project. And with that, I've got just a couple more comments here. As far as the process of construction goes, we do have a nice video. If you go to our Enbridge website, do a search for Line 5 Reroute. If you're not familiar with construction, there's a nice video on that page that might fill you in on some of the processes that we use there. And then the last thing that I wanted to go over is just the notion that building a pipeline like this takes a lot of work. Contractors, individuals from the area, hotels, motels, supplies, gas stations. If there's anybody on the call that has an interest in participating, we've got the Enbridge email. It's Enbridge in WI, so it's Enbridge in Wisconsin, Enbridge in WI, at enbridge.com. And if you've got an interest, please send an email to that address. We'll get you on our list of folks to consider and see how we can work you in. So that's what I have for an update. Turning it over to April. Go ahead.
Thanks, Adam. And again, thank you to everybody who's taken the time today to join us. I'll just highlight a couple of things with respect to tribal engagement. The first is simply that we continue to engage safely with folks in the communities in this area and hear what they have to say. Importantly, one of the ways that we've been able to broaden our reach is to have tribal liaisons who actually live in the communities and whom you know and trust. And we have two tribal liaisons who reside in the Bad River Reservation and one that's on the LCO Reservation down in Hayward. These individuals are there to serve as a source of information for everybody and be able to bring back questions to us if they don't have the answers at their fingertips. In addition to our tribal liaisons, you're always able to reach out to myself or Gail Wahlberg, who specializes in our socioeconomic participation with respect to training and contracting, and also, of course, Michelle. And we're here to hear your concerns and insight about the proposed project. We can meet through video conference, phone, or safely in person, if that's the preference. Of course, any in-person meetings would occur only with the proper social distancing and face coverings and such. So please do feel free to reach out to any of us. One of the things that we hear a lot in the community is one of the top three concerns and questions is that folks want to know about workforce training opportunities and jobs. And so we do have training opportunities that come up from time to time. Just recently we had an OSHA 30 training as well as the welders, helper, and fire watch training. And we were able to have quite a few people take part in those trainings. We plan to have additional training opportunities as we move into the spring and summer, but unfortunately, I don't have specific dates that I can share with you at this time. But if you are interested in any future training opportunities, please contact us at our general email, which Adam shared, and I'll share it again. It's Enbridge in Wisconsin. So Enbridge, I-N-W-I, at Enbridge.com. And with that, I will hand this back over to Michelle, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thanks, April, Adam, and Joe. It's a great update. We have a couple questions here. I'm going to start with a question for Joe. And here's the question. I've heard a lot about the environmental impact statement. What is the EIS process, and what is the current timeline for the EIS to be complete?
Thanks, Michelle. The EIS process, the DNR, is preparing an environmental impact statement. The purpose of that is to inform decision makers and the public about the environmental and socioeconomic effects of the proposed Line 5 project and its alternatives. The EIS covers direct local effects as well as broader impacts to the region. The process started out with a public scoping meeting that was held back on July 1st, 2020. From the scoping meeting, the DNR receives comments. Then from there, they go into a information gathering and analysis period where they prepare the draft EIS. The draft EIS, once that's complete, gets posted on the DNR webpage. They hold another public hearing and comment period, and then the DNR looks at those comments and they prepare the final EIS. Is generally the how the process goes. As far as current timeline, it looks like that's going to be completed towards third quarter, fourth quarter of the year is the best estimate I have at this point.
Okay, thanks, Joe. I have another question for you, since you're ready to go. Here it is. Is the Wisconsin DNR requiring Enbridge to mitigate affected wetlands?
Yes, as far as wetlands, we proposed to provide compensatory mitigation for wetlands. We're currently in discussions with DNR on what that looks like. But yeah, we're planning to mitigate for affected wetlands for temporary loss, conversion, or the limited amount of fill that may occur.
Okay, thank you. All right, Adam, a couple questions for you. There's some similarities, so here they are. What's the suspected start date for mainline work, and who is the prime contractor? And then when you're done with that, can you tackle the question about has the electrical contractor or other trades been awarded this project?
Sure. So thank you. So with regards to the schedule, I'll talk about that one first. Really, it boils down to what the permitting process looks like and how we get through that. It's going to certainly be the first half of 2021 in that process. Beyond that, we don't have a definitive start date. So that's the answer to that question. With regards to the contractors, we are currently talking with a number of mainline contractors. Those mainline contractors will likely have the scope to also do the little bit of facilities work, meaning the valve sites and whatnot that we have, and that hasn't been awarded yet. So we do have our bid list. We have sent proposals out. We are talking with those contractors, but we haven't been awarded. And the electrical, for the most part, would be included in that process. So that's the answer to that one. Back to you, Michelle.
Excellent. Thanks, everybody. Okay. I think we should move on to our next agenda item. Remember, ask questions anytime. You can in the chat, put it in there online, or press zero on your phone. And our next speaker is Apache Danforth, and April is going to introduce Apache. So I'm turning it over to you, April.
Great, thank you. So I'm very pleased to introduce our next speaker, who is going to be talking about our Human Trafficking Awareness and Prevention Program, which we've established for the Line 5 relocation project here in Wisconsin. This has been established to address human trafficking issues and concerns that the communities and we have. We take these issues very seriously, and we have an opportunity to make a difference, and so we are hoping to. And with that, I will introduce Apache Danforth, who is a member of the Oneida Nation in Wisconsin. She's an independent consultant who recently began working with the Native-owned Paradigm Design Studio to assist with project management of this Wisconsin Human Trafficking Awareness and Prevention Program and campaign. And she's our lead. So Apache, take it away.
Thanks, April. And thank you, Michelle, for organizing this meeting. I know all the work that goes into putting something like this together, so I appreciate that. Sigali Fablake, that's greetings to everyone. Yaga wanawatu niungyat okali wagwaho ni wagitalora. Okali oniota aga ni wagadahunjo. My Oneida given name is Yaga wanawatu. It means she speaks good words, and I'm from the Wolf Clan, and the Oneida Nation is my home. So I'm here in Green Bay, Wisconsin, and my English name is Apache Danforth. And as you know, I'm the project manager for this project at Paradigm Media. And we are committed to developing a human trafficking awareness and prevention program for Enbridge and all of its contractors throughout the state of Wisconsin. I feel I have to preface my comments first by sharing that I was raised in a family of activists heavily involved with the American Indian Movement. So I feel I have a personal mission and responsibility to engage with Enbridge and take a seat at the table and give this project an Indigenous voice. I also think it's important to remain true to the values and traditions of the Indigenous people during the development of this program, and include, you know, the core values and principles of the people that we are serving in this community in northern Wisconsin and throughout the state. And I just understand that the importance of using my voice and experience and my heartfelt energy to tell our story through this project. Previously, Paradigm developed a human trafficking awareness prevention program in the state of Minnesota. And if you do a quick Google search, the campaign is called Your Call Minnesota. That was a result of the program, the HTAP, Human Trafficking Awareness Prevention Program in Minnesota. But it'll take you some great content. Again, that's Your Call MN. But currently with that, we are establishing an Indigenous-led HTAP, Human Trafficking Awareness Prevention Program, advisory group here in Wisconsin of interested and qualified individuals. And we really need certain expertise to provide the advice and recommendations to Paradigm that's going to go into this HTAP for Enbridge. So this is a unique opportunity for those in the communities that are affected by human trafficking in the state to take our seat at the table and to provide recommendations. And we really need your academic, your cultural, and your community perspectives to curate this program so that it's impactful and educational and authentic. So inclusivity is critical for this program. And with that, I'd just like to, if you'd like any more information on the program or how to get involved with our advisory group, please feel free to call or email me. I believe Michelle or April would have my contact information. Thank you all very much for taking the time again today. And with that, I will end my comments. Thank you, and turn it back over to April or Michelle.
Thanks, Apache. That was great. Appreciate that. Introduction to human trafficking and our plans for prevention and awareness. So appreciate your time today. Okay, we have a couple questions here. April, I'm going to start with you. I'm going to start with something else. There's a question here about at what stage is Enbridge in the permitting process and what do you see as the timeline? So we are currently in the environmental permitting process with the Wisconsin DNR. We are awaiting the draft environmental impact statement. And as Joe mentioned earlier, we are awaiting the draft environmental impact statement, which would be available for public review. Okay. Joe, did you want to add anything to that question?
Yeah, I can add. Michelle, that covers it. I mean, we submitted our permit applications. The permit applications are in review with the agency, and we work with them to help them complete their review and respond to any additional questions they have. Like we talked about, the DNR has their EIS process that they're going through as well. But basically, we submitted applications. We're working through the process. And as far as timeline, we don't have a definitive timeline, but we're looking towards the end of the year to hopefully have that process complete.
Okay, great. And Joe, there's another question for you. This is great. We're getting a lot of questions today. The question for you is, can tribes be added as a cooperating agency in the Wisconsin DNR EIS process similar to federal?
Yeah, thanks, Michelle. I know DNR has been consulting with tribes, but as far as actually having them be a cooperating agency, I'm not sure on that. We would have to get back to you on that answer.
Okay, and I'm assuming that if they're interested, they could reach out to the Wisconsin DNR and ask them that question.
Yes, definitely. That's the correct avenue.
Okay. All right, so that answered that question. And we have another question here. When we said agency, we were referring to the Wisconsin DNR. All right. Excellent. And, okay, a couple more questions. April, I have a question for you here. Will there be man camps during construction, and if so, where will they be located?
There will be no man camps. We have inventoried the lodging options throughout the area, roughly from around Iron River over east to Ironwood, and then a bit south. And there is sufficient lodging for the predicted workforce. So again, there will be no man camps.
Excellent. Thank you, April. There's a kind of a follow-up question here. Maybe it's more of just a comment, but I thought you'd like to address it. And it is, Enbridge doesn't respect treaty rights.
Sure. That's definitely a question or statement, rather, that I hear a lot. I think we all do. And, you know, in this format of meeting, it's maybe a little bit difficult to answer that because it's always helpful for me to understand exactly how someone perceives that we're not respecting treaty rights. But absent being able to have that back and forth conversation, some of the things that I would offer up as we see it in respecting treaty rights, a few things like increased safety measures that we have in place. So for instance, a horizontal directional drill as a construction method, replacing line 3 under the Mississippi River. And on this project, this relocation project, we've also, we're planning on a horizontal directional drill under the Bad River as well, and other rivers. And that's to, that construction method is much less environmentally impactful method. And so having our increased safety measures and minimizing our impacts to the environment, I think, is a way that we respect treaty rights. And we try to just eliminate any of the threats to the greatest extent possible. Another way that I see respecting treaty rights and also supporting the tribe's sovereignty is engaging during the permitting process from the beginning. I think everybody is aware that in the past, engaging from the beginning hasn't always happened. And, you know, those days are gone decades ago. And so that's another way that I see we respect treaty rights. We also have tribal monitors on our pre-permitting survey crews, and also tribal construction monitors during construction to make sure that everybody has their eyes on the project and nothing's getting missed, because tribal members are the ones who are best able to identify any cultural resources on their lands. And, you know, our unanticipated discoveries plan incorporates tribal historic preservation officers, not just the state historic preservation officers. And then also something as simple, you know, as buying locally, and whether it's locally harvested and produced goods such as fish, smoked fish, wild rice, all of that, but also making sure that we are including tribal members in contracting, giving the opportunities for the work and contracting. So those are just a few things that I would offer up. And again, without being able to have that back and forth to truly understand where somebody might be thinking that we're disrespecting treaty rights.
Okay. Thank you, April. We got more questions. Trent, here is a question for operations. Why is Enbridge running a line through our country when clearly you have your own country? Why does it have to come into ours?
Well, thanks, Michelle. That's a good question. First off, I am a U.S. citizen and born and raised and lived in the U.S. my whole life. And half of Enbridge's employees are also U.S. citizens as well. So, you know, I think that it's important to make sure we set that stage straight. The other is, you know, I know there's a bit of a narrative going around that Line 5 just basically bypasses Canada. It goes through Wisconsin and the UP and through Michigan and then ends in Ontario. What people don't understand is along that system, along Line 5, there's a number of areas that product is pulled off of Line 5 and made into things that we use every single day, like propane and like gasoline and diesel fuel, jet fuel. Those areas are both all in Superior, they're in Rapid River, they're all the way into Detroit and then serves a lot of those refineries. So there's a big chunk of the product that comes off of Line 5 that is used certainly in the U.S. and even what is then transported onto into Canada is then processed and returns back into the U.S. from Canada. So I think that it's important for people to understand that, you know, why does it come through the U.S.? Because we need it, and we've needed it for the 70 years that it's been operating, and we're very, very reliant. I think as we've seen over the last couple of weeks with the polar vortex that's impacted our neighbors to the south primarily, there's a lot of interconnectivity within our energy infrastructure across the U.S. and we've seen the reliance of that energy that Canada has continued to supply the U.S. again for 70 years. And so, you know, I think that typically when I have that conversation with people, it helps them to understand that there is a big reliance within the U.S. on Line 5 and on the Enbridge system overall. So we can't necessarily just pick and choose, you know, how we want to take that perception. So I think the other thing I'll just mention as well, you know, Wisconsin has no oil production. Michigan has very little oil production. Minnesota has none as well. And so it's important for people to understand that we are reliant in our states on these other sources to supply us. So with that, hopefully that answered the question, but I do appreciate it. It's a good one.
Good. Thanks, Trent. Okay, we do have, there's a couple questions here, but we're going to save them. I want to make sure we have time to answer everybody's questions and also hear from our next speaker. So next up on our agenda is an update on Line 5 in Michigan, including the status of the Great Lakes Tunnel Project. We chose this topic specifically based on interest and questions from you, our Wisconsin stakeholders. The infrastructure systems that deliver energy we need are complex and complicated, and they require us to look beyond our immediate communities to fully understand and appreciate. Trent said it better, but I said it twice. So please continue to ask questions via the web chat and on your phone by pressing the zero key, and I'm going to introduce Paul. Paul Meneghini has over 27 years of experience in regulatory and environmental permitting in several Midwest states and front-end project development of large pipeline, power line, and rail projects. He holds a civil engineering degree from Michigan Tech and a master's in business from the University of St. Thomas. Currently, he leads a team of professionals responsible for stakeholder engagement activities along Enbridge's pipeline systems in Illinois, Indiana, Michigan, Ohio, and New York. All right, Paul, I'm going to turn it over to you.
Thanks, Michelle. And if I could just get a verify that I'm coming through okay.
You sound great.
All right, thank you. Again, thanks for the introduction, Michelle. Again, my name is Paul Meneghini, and I'm a native of the UP, but currently Duluth, Minnesota is my home. Thanks for giving us the opportunity to present a little bit about a project we have on the go on Line 5 a little bit further than northern Wisconsin. Primarily over in the Straits of Mackinac, connecting the UP and the Lower Peninsula of Michigan. I do have 6 or 7 slides, so I apologize if you happen to be dialing in by phone only. You might not be able to see these slides, but I'll try to describe them as good as I can. So with that, the first slide is 7 ways to protect Michigan's water. I'm not sure how everyone has been following the Line 5 Michigan project or the Great Lakes Tunnel project, as we now refer to it, but a little bit of background. In late 2017 and through 2018, Enbridge entered into a series of 3 different agreements with the state of Michigan. At the end of the day, those agreements called for 7 different ways to continue and further protect Michigan's water. So I'll briefly touch on these 7 main parts, if you will, of these agreements. The first one is we assessed various technologies and abilities to further protect or even replace the pipeline segment in the Straits of Mackinac. As you may be aware, Line 5 is a 30-inch pipeline for the majority of its 650-mile route from Superior, Wisconsin to Sarnia, Ontario, with the exception of about 4 miles of it that crosses the Straits of Mackinac, so from St. Ignace, Michigan to Mackinac City, Michigan, just west of the Mackinac Bridge. If you've ever crossed the bridge, it's out to the west about a half a mile. At that water body crossing, the pipeline splits from one 30-inch pipeline into 2 20-inch pipelines, so we commonly refer to them as the dual pipelines. When those pipelines were originally permitted and designed and built, they are essentially buried from the shorelines out to a depth of about 50 feet of water, so they're buried within the sediment of the lake, but then they were exposed or laying on the bottom of the Straits of Mackinac from, again, about that 50 feet of water on each side where they kind of enter back into the sediment. So the pipes are exposed on the bottom of the lake. So we have agreed with the state to replace those 2 20-inch pipelines and relocate them within a underground tunnel beneath the Straits of Mackinac. So no disruption to the lake bottom. The studies back in 2017 and 2018 looked at a couple other feasible or potentially feasible technologies, including covering the pipelines with additional riprap or cover to prevent any type of an anchor strike. Also, we looked at a horizontal directional drill, which was mentioned before. It's a very common crossing technique in modern times beneath water bodies. But at the end of the day, the decision was made to put it in a concrete line tunnel upwards of 100 feet or more below the lake bed. So again, we'll get into that a lot more here, but I wanted to touch on the other protections that we've agreed upon. There also was a concern that our ability, Enbridge's ability to respond, and even our first responders in general, Coast Guard, EPA, state, would have a difficult time responding to an oil leak if the pipelines were currently, so the current configuration on the bottom of the straits, were to rupture or leak for some reason if there was bad weather. The Straits is known for high waves, bad weather, where a cleanup to access the oil on the surface of the water could be impaired or greatly reduced. The efficiency of a cleanup could be reduced. So as part of these agreements, we've agreed to actually stop the flow of oil in Line 5 when straight water or when waves in the Straits reach an 8-foot peak, if you will, for a 1-hour duration. So between now and when the tunnel is built, we've agreed to shut down the pipe during those adverse weather events. So if there happened to be a release, to again greatly reduce the chance of any oil getting out of the Straits and subsequently issues with a successful cleanup and recovery. The third measure to protect Michigan waters is we've identified or implemented additional safety measures to avoid ship anchor strikes in the Straits. As you may be aware, on April Fool's Day and April 1st in 2018, a freighter, a large articulated barge and tugboat, came through the Straits and unknowingly was dragging their anchor. And actually, it was identified because they tore or connected into a couple different fiber optic cables electrical cables that were at the bottom of the strait, so it reduced some of the electrical redundancy service to the UP. It also hit our underground pipelines, caused some small dents, but did not breach the pipeline. There was never a safety or integrity concern to them. But again, that obviously was very critical and a very serious moment for all involved. So since that time, Enbridge has greatly increased our ship anchor mitigation program in the Straits, where essentially we have boats on the water 24/7, again, weather depending. They're not out there now with a little bit of, you know, obviously freeze up in the Straits also, but probably for 9 to 10 months of the year, we essentially have a boat parked over our pipelines in the Straits and making sure that, I'll say, the smaller vessels, there's no suspicious activity, loitering, any type of a potential of an anchor being drugged through that area. Obviously, the greatest harm is the large vessels. So we have established what we call our ESMOC, our Enbridge Straits Maritime Operating Center, where we have dial into all of the ship traffic, I guess I'll call it kind of a ship traffic for air traffic control, and identify as large vessels, as large boats approach the Straits. We are in communications with them. We provide them a warning that is a no anchor zone. It's a restricted zone. We also then dispatch a boat, a different boat, to go out and actually do a 360-degree drive around of these freighters to make sure that their anchors are up and properly stowed in the pocket on the vessel. Again, this happens before they cross our pipelines. So we have this communication. We have patrol boats going out. We are also in the process of setting up six very impressive high-resolution cameras around the Straits of Mackinac, where we'll be able to get those boats off the water, hopefully sometime here later on in 2021, and we'll be able to be doing all of these observations from these six camera towers in order to observe all sides of the boat. Very high-tech cameras, IR, infrared, can see through dense fog and weather, and again, we 24/7, 365. So that four of those six cameras are up and running. We're currently in the process of getting those last two sighted and up. The other four, I'll skip over a little bit quicker, but we evaluate additional tools and technologies to inspect the existing pipelines in the Straits. We also agreed to look at many other water body crossings. Obviously, 550 miles or so is the length of Line 5 across Michigan. So we did an assessment of various other water and stream crossings. One of the biggest results out of that is we have actually completed last year replacing the segment of Line 5 that crosses beneath the St. Clair River. So the St. Clair River is what essentially divides Michigan and Ontario in St. Clair County, so just north of the Detroit metro area. We have just last year completed a horizontal directional drill to replace that segment of pipeline. And then it's the state wanted to make sure we'd have adequate insurance in the event of a very dark day in the Straits and a release of oil, that we had plenty of financial ability to come in and clean up the relief. Next slide. The next slide gets into the weeds a bit. I apologize for those, again, who are on the phone, but it really just shows a couple of the various permitting processes and activities that we've completed since the agreements were finalized in 2018. A Mackinac Straits Corridor Authority has been established by the Michigan legislature, who are working with them. Essentially, we will build the tunnel, place the pipeline in it, and the state, the Mackinac Corridor Authority, will own the tunnel. Also, we are in the permitting process, as described earlier, for the project in Wisconsin. We have applied for all of our federal and state permits. Just recently, at the end of January, we received our state permits from EGLE, which I would say is the same parallel agency to the Wisconsin DNR. So we have our permits from the state. We are still in the process of obtaining our permits from the federal, from the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, and then also from the Michigan State Public Service Commission, which would give us the ability to, again, relocate the segment into the tunnel. The next slide shows a little bit of the alignment. The top photo kind of shows all the various geotechnical borings that we've done off of a boat. in order to really understand the substrate in the Straits. Obviously, a tunnel project of this magnitude is really essentially a mining project. We're mining a tunnel, if you will. So a significant amount of geotech borings were done. And the bottom figure with the color coding, really, it kind of, there's essentially three different types of bedrock in the Straits, shown by the three different colors. And you can see a proposed tunnel alignment, which is how we, our current design anyway, and how we would mine the tunnel to stay in the desired type of rock formations as we mine the tunnel. We expect to start on the south side and mine approximately 4 miles, slightly over 4 miles, and come out on the north side or the St. Ignace side where the machine will be retrieved and taken out of the ground and hauled off for disposal. The next slide shows a little bit of a schematic of what a tunnel boring machine looks like. Again, the current design calls for, at the end of the day, a 21-foot inside diameter tunnel. The tunnel, once it's mined, we bring in these precast concrete segments, which essentially form the outer lining of the tunnel. We're looking at a portal to shaft design. Essentially, the machine will be driven in on the south side into a portal or a launch site. And on the north shore, in order to minimize our footprint, we actually will be digging a 100-foot deep shaft, and the tunnel will daylight, if you will, at the bottom of that shaft, and then it will be taken out in pieces by a crane. So that's what I mean by a portal to shaft design. And again, the 30-inch pipelines, currently the two 20-inch pipelines, will be abandoned and relocated within one 30-inch pipeline in the bottom of the Straits. The next slide, again, just shows some of the complex parts and pieces of a tunnel boring machine. They are very sophisticated equipment. We are using what we refer to as a slurry pressurized phase tunnel boring machine. Obviously, you're at a lot of pressure down, you know, a couple 300 feet in the ground below the Straits. So it's really a complex machine in order to mine the associated soil and bedrock, basically a big cutter face which grinds away at the rock and soil through a pressurized slurry is out there. So just like a water well. It's kind of the same, but you're going horizontal where you lose that bentonite-based slurry and mud to take those fines or those cuttings off of the tunnel face, and then they are pumped out, again, from the machine to the surface where they're treated and properly disposed of. The final slide just gives you a quick shot of what the inside of the tunnel would look like at the end of the day. It's essentially, like I said, a 21-foot concrete-lined tunnel, various leak detection systems installed in their pipeline would be placed on anchors on the inside of the tunnel. Also, there is, and this was part of the vision of the legislature in 2018, was to provide the opportunity for other third-party utilities. Obviously, it's a connectivity issue for Michigan, being not sharing a common ground, if you will, between the Lower Peninsula and the Upper Peninsula. The only current connection is the Mackinac Bridge, which actually has a significant amount of utilities on the bridge deck or underneath it. But there has been a strong, I'll call it outward request for various fiber, cable, even potential other electric utilities to co-locate inside of this tunnel once it's completed. So I think it can provide additional benefits to Michiganders. With that, I'll wrap up my presentation, and I'll turn it back over to you, Michelle, to field any questions. Thanks.
Thanks, Paul. That was a great overview of what's going on in Michigan. A couple questions are coming in. The first question I have is for Adam, if you could answer this question. What is Enbridge doing to keep the union workers safe from hostile protesters for the duration of the project?
Well, so I guess first of all, it's working hard with the community to minimize protest activity in the first place. We've got these meetings, we've got direct landowner conversations, we've got open houses. We're working to build relationships, maintain relationships, and of course, many other methods there. So that's the first thing. Second thing is training in the workforce in de-escalation. When we do see protest activity on the right-of-way, we don't want anybody getting hurt on either side of that. And so the first thing is just to stand down. And if you need to evacuate the area, that's what we train. Beyond that, we do have a security force that we employ for a project, and they're really more out there for eyes and ears to see what's going on, to see where activity might be happening. And then, of course, the last level would be close communication and coordination with law enforcement, where we see activities that we see are unsafe to workers, to the community. Law enforcement will be involved, and that hopefully will take care of the immediate threat and keep people safe. So that's the main tenets, I think, of our program. So back to you, Michelle.
Thank you, Adam. Just to reiterate, we respect everybody's rights to protest peacefully. Okay, a question here for Trent. So here's the question. Why bother with the reroute project when Line 5 will be shut down in Michigan?
Well, thanks, Michelle. It's a good question. And first off, we don't feel that Michigan's claims are warranted in that regard. You know, Paul spent some time talking about the project itself, but there's a whole other side of the equation when it comes to the various lawsuits that are currently existing. You know, it's important for people to recognize that our regulator is not on the state side, but it's on the federal side through the DOT, and so we've certainly spent a great deal of time over the, you know, really decades that we've been in operation there at the Straits, you know, providing a lot of additional information to our regulators to ensure that it's a very science-based process that they go through, and so we've certainly satisfied every question or concern that our regulators have had. I'll mention as well that the state recently issued the permits on their side for the tunnel itself, and so we're at the federal level now for the Army Corps permits, and so, you know, and I'll just mention quickly, I talked, you know, about the importance of Line 5, and you can definitely see the citizens, the industry experts throughout the state of Michigan, and really those who are so dependent on Line 5 to provide propane for their homes and gasoline and diesel fuel for their cars. They're very supportive of Line 5, and so we sometimes don't hear, they don't necessarily have the same political forum that some of those in opposition do have, but they are definitely supportive of Line 5. So we feel very comfortable that you know, we're Line 5 will be in operation for many, many years to come.
Okay, thank you, Trent. Next up, April, I have a question for you. Can you share if there's a expected number of Native employees on the project?
Yeah, good question. So at this time, we have not set any kind of quota for the number of, you know, different workers that we will have on the project. However, it is our stance that we will maximize Native hire and contracting to the greatest extent we can. And so, as I mentioned a little bit earlier ago, you know, we hear a lot from community members wanting training and jobs, and we absolutely are committed to preparing a workforce to work on this project. What we found is that when people see in the field, when they're working with us, and they're taking part in building the infrastructure, maintaining the infrastructure, there's a lot more understanding of how business is done, how our work is done, and there's a lot of pride in that. So right now I don't have a specific number for you, but we will be maximizing tribal hire and contracting.
Thank you, April. All right. We have 1 minute left in our allotted time, although we can go over, and if any of you can hang with us a little while longer, that's great too. We do have a couple more questions we want to make sure we get in. And again, if you have to leave the meeting, no worries. You can watch the or listen to the recording online in about a week or two. But I want to make sure we get to all of our questions. Paul, we have a bunch of questions for you, actually, specifically related to Line 5 in Michigan. So there's a couple here. What's the level of financial responsibility required by the state? And then there's a couple questions related to mining. Doesn't the state of Michigan law prohibit mining under the Great Lakes? And does Enbridge, what does Enbridge plan to do with the any ore of value that's removed?
Sure. Thank you, Michelle. Regarding the financial responsibility question, I guess I'm not super sure what the specifics are, but I wanted to maybe the tunnel will not be owned by Enbridge. We essentially are the contractor and will construct the tunnel, but like I mentioned, through the Mackinac Straits Corridor Authority, the state of Michigan will own the tunnel. Enbridge is responsible for various maintenance activities once the tunnel is built and constructed, and we'll have a lease to operate, place and operate our pipeline in the tunnel for a period of time. So I hope that touches on the financial responsibility. Again, it will be owned by the state of Michigan. I do, thanks for the mining question. I probably informed folks a bit here. I refer to it as a mining project just because of the technical challenges and the technical issues of it, if you will. We're mining or removing is a better term, rock and soil in order to create this void to place a tunnel in. So there is no mining. Some of the technical, words and challenges are very similar to deep rock mines, right, with stabilization, different things like that. So there is no mining where any type of ore or material of value will be collected or sold, if you will, as a result of the tunnel project. It'll essentially be a waste rock, if you will, that will be removed to create the void for the tunnel. So I apologize for that reference to mining. But again, it's just a technical term because of the same challenges and the same types of techniques used are very similar. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Paul. All right. I'd like to, a couple questions for everybody in the audience here. We have some poll questions. First, while we're getting that set up, I want to just talk a little bit about the resources available. We have an Enbridge in Wisconsin e-newsletter delivered twice a month to your inbox. You can sign up at Enbridge, I-N-W-I, at enbridge.com to sign up. Adam covered off on the business opportunities for Line 5, and just so you know, I've already gotten an email from somebody on today's call asking for some information about how to get their business ready to work for Enbridge. So the email works. Feel free to use it. We'd love to hear from you. And online and social media, if you like to participate and voice your opinions and see what's going on social media, we're on Facebook, Enbridge Line 5 Wisconsin. We're also on Twitter and Instagram at Enbridge. All right, so the first question, the first polling is, how did you learn about this event? Type the number on the webcast. If you're on your phone, press the number. Enbridge in Wisconsin newsletter, if that's how you found out about the event, press 1. If an Enbridge representative told you, press 2. Press 3 for Facebook and press 4 for word of mouth. Okay, and then I do encourage you to check out our Enbridge Line 5 page. There's a lot of information. Adam mentioned there's a video that talks about the construction process. There's also some other videos. April referenced our tribal monitors working on the project. There's a bunch of videos that it explains what the work is that they do. So really good stuff. Okay, let's go to the next poll question. An easy question. Was this an informative call and a good investment of my time? Yes is 1 and 2 is no. then I really encourage you to sign up for our newsletter. It's a great way to keep up with all aspects of Enbridge in Wisconsin. You get to learn about project-specific things and some of the other things that we're working on. All right, the last poll question is, what topics are you interested in for the next meeting, which we have tentatively scheduled for April? The questions are, I don't know if it's if the poll question is live. Okay. So the topics for the poll question number three are construction, environment, three is tribal community engagement, four is safety, and five is jobs. There we go. So that's construction is one, environment is two. If these are things you're interested in hearing more about, tribal community engagement is three, safety is four, and jobs is five. Great. Thank you guys for answering the poll questions. This is awesome. We really appreciate your time today. So thanks, everybody. Thanks especially to our panel for the update, to Apache for the information on our efforts about human trafficking awareness and prevention in Wisconsin, and to Paul for the update on Line 5 in Michigan. Thanks, everybody, today for your interactions and your questions. On behalf of the entire team here at Enbridge, thanks for joining us today and have a great day.